Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And he flew on his private plane to Tijuana, and he told me, meet me at the, he says, I will have a driver pick you up at the McDonald's. So right when you cross the San Ysidro border at the time, there's a McDonald's.
Hey, you're in Mexico.
I'm in Mexico now. I'm in Tijuana. And I get picked up by a Sicarios in a bulletproof vehicle, and they say, they roll down the window. They say, Güero? I say, yeah. Jump in the car. And I get in the car, and I sit in this I think it was a Suburban or Escalade, and I look back, and there's these two Sicarios with guns, and I'm like, oh, this is it. Like, this is, they're going to just blow my brain off. I thought it was done. But keep in mind, I already had popped about 3 Xanax, some GHB. I was prepared to die. So I was, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die calm, right?
Hey, gang, welcome back to part 2 of the interview with Owen Hansen, former member of the USC championship football team, not just once, but twice. If you joined us for yesterday's episode, you found out about this guy's entrepreneurial skills. He doesn't come from a wealthy family, but he went into a wealthy environment and he learned, I'm not making excuses for him, but he learned how to survive in that environment. Unfortunately, it involved illegal activities, but we're going to talk about how he came out of all that. Once again, thank you for coming back every week to join me here on Game of Crimes. Couldn't do any of this without you. So truly, truly appreciate your support. If you're not on YouTube yet, do me a favor, go over, check out, you'll see Owen Hansen. This is a good looking young man here. I'm not going to tell you how old he is, but he certainly doesn't look his age. He don't look like Murphy or, you know, this old decrepit fat man over here with no hair. I don't know if he's got hair or not. He's wearing a hat, but, still, go check him out. While you're there, click on that subscribe button for me. I'm trying to blow up YouTube this year. You folks have been very supportive on all the other social medias platforms, so we're just going to try and do that with YouTube this year. Okay, let's get back in. Owen, welcome back. Thank you for your patience, buddy.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me back.
Truly enjoying this interview. And as we mentioned yesterday, Owen has a book out. It's called The California Kid. At the end of the podcast, you'll be able to see where you can get this. But I tell you right now, you can get it on Amazon right there. That's where I got my copy. It will not come with those pink tabs. Those are tabs that I put in there when I'm reading somebody's book and doing a little research on them. So go over and check his book out. I'm telling you, it's worth the read. It's a book that you pick up, start reading, and you'll have a hard time putting it down. So at the end of yesterday's interview, you were telling us about the betting business that you were in, that you created betodog.com. And I mean, when other bookies were being busted, you were being left alone. Is that because your service were offshore in Costa Rica, or why did they come for them and not you?
You know, I don't think I was big enough at the time, right? That's what I was thinking. Maybe I wasn't big enough for them to look at me. But later on in life, in the book, you're going to see that they were actually watching me the whole time. They were just feeling the situation out, and you'll see what happened. I started to take bets from a very infamous cartel, one of the biggest cartels in the world at the time. And I was introduced to this member, this lieutenant for them, through one of my agents. And at the time, I didn't know what this person did in New Mexico. I just knew he was a wealthy businessman. And I started taking these bets, you know, and I was getting these duffel bags dropped off in Newport Beach, $250,000 at a time. And I told my agent, the agent's a sub bookie, and I was paying him 50% of everything he brought in from this whale.
Wow.
Because in my business, if guys are losing, I can afford to pay you 50% because it's they never win. So I developed
this. That's important what you said. Who never wins?
The people customer, that bet? Yeah, you can't beat the house.
The house always has to win, right?
The house always wins. Remember, we're charging you already. Right when you make that first wager, you're already getting charged 10%. Right out the door. So you already have a disadvantage. Vegas, everyone's been to Vegas. It's built for a reason. It's built off losers, not winners.
Yep.
And every time there's a new casino, guess what? It's a new loser.
When I walk into a casino, I throw $20 on the floor and go to my room because I never win.
Yep, just go flush it. So I knew I had an advantage. I was now this casino, right? I was at Vegas, but I was mobile. So I took my business model a little different from that Italian bookie that was only paying me 20%. I said, you know what? There's enough room for everybody to eat. Let's pay them 50% and let's just guarantee, let's say you're guaranteeing your customer's going to pay because I don't care if there's an excuse that he stiffs you or he couldn't pay you because I'm paying you 50%. So guess what? I get paid first. You collect your commission after. And that was the mentality I had. So everyone paid me. And when this guy started bringing me this whale, it's not my job as a bookmaker to do a background check on my sub bookies players. That's not my business. They're bringing me cash. I'm paying them cash when they win. That's all we care about.
Well, you're already involved in an illegal business.
Exactly. You know, at the time, bookmaking wasn't really looked at that serious, you know, so guys are given like 1 to 2 years, but ambitious, I would say. I started taking these bets and the guy's dropping off duffel bags and I'm like, okay, you got a whale. Keep this guy happy.
Is that common for people to drop off duffel bags of money to you?
It's not common, but it's usually, you know, it's usually a payment by Thursday and it's either a wire through a shell corporation that I have or, you know, $10,000, $20,000 here or there with customers. Never in my whole time I've ever seen this happen. But okay. I'm not going to say no. The cash is coming in. So finally, I knew it was a Sunday night and this guy had a 5-team parlay. He's been losing for 4 weeks in a row now. And finally, he's about to win. And that's my biggest thing in business. If a guy's going to win, I'm excited because now they feel like they have a hope. They can beat me. And I remember calling this sub bookie, this agent, and I said, hey, get over here. I said, 10 p.m., this game's going to be over. The Raiders are going to win, and this guy's going to crack us for like 200. I think it was like 260,000. I said, pick up the bag of cash. I said, Monday morning, I want you on his door. I don't know where he lives, but wherever he lives, I want you to give him that bag as soon as he wakes up. He's like, why? I said, dude, this guy's been losing for the last 4 weeks and he's given us close to $1 million. I said, let's pay him like he pays us. And no one understands that mentality, but I want it to be the same way. If you win, I want you to get paid. If you lose, I want to get paid. It's a business 101.
Right.
So I told him 8 a.m. I don't care. Have a cup of coffee for him. And that's what he did. And after that opened the can of worms. That's where this thing started to take a turn. And that's why we're together today, because he came back and he says, my uncle really liked the way you did business. And I said, your uncle? He goes, yeah, that's my VIP customer. I said, okay. And then he handed me this encrypted phone and I said, what's this? It was a BlackBerry. And he says, this is an encrypted phone. This is the password. My uncle wants to speak to you. Like, what do you mean he wants to speak to me?
Are you thinking he's going to place bets with you?
Yeah, I didn't know. At the time, I'm just thinking, okay, I'm like, am I using my black market concierge service for him? Like, what does he need? I said, does he need a trip to Cabo? Like, I don't understand what he needs me for. And he said, Weto, I really like how you paid me on Monday. That was good business. He says, I understand you're a big bookmaker in the United States. And this is all on, this is not on the phone. This is through an encrypted message through a phantom secure phone. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning the system. Like, you got to put two codes in. There's two passwords. It's encrypted, blah, blah, blah. You can't even speak on this thing. The microphone's taken out. The GPS is taken out. And every time you send a message, it goes through this encryption and your message is deleted. And I'm like, okay, well, this is pretty high tech, whoever this guy is. I said, well, what do you need? I'm thinking, he says, I understand you probably have cash all over the United States. Would you be willing to help me move some money and pay some of my employees in Mexico or in the United States? I said, well, whatever you need. He goes, I'm willing to pay you 10% of anything you move for me or anybody you pay for me. Easy, Steve. You know, he's like, I have a safe house in San Diego. I need to pay a worker $100,000 over there in cash. Like, easy. Like, I'm going to make $10,000 just to drop off $100,000, like, in a day. Like, not even a day. What is it going to take one of my runners 2 hours, right, to drive south?
Now, are you paying with your money or
they're paying with my cash?
Okay.
So, you got to remember, as a bookmaker, you have to have cash all over the United States to be able to pay your customers. So, I have cash everywhere. So, see, California is really easy for me because that's my hub. So, when he says $100,000 down in, I think it was Vista, I said, no problem. So, now he owes me $110,000. And what was so beneficial to me, he says he could wire the money anywhere internationally. For me, that's good. You got to remember, I have my office in Costa Rica. So now I'm able to pay my employees and not have to worry about bringing money down there. Because before, I was old school. I would bring 10 of my friends. I'd give them $10,000 each, and they'd fly on the plane. And that's how I'd bring my cash down there. And then I'd let them stay at my house in Costa Rica, and they party all week, and we'd do it once a month. And that's how I was bringing money to pay them. But now this opened the door for me. I could avoid the fee. I was paying everyone 5% to take the money down. So they took $10,000. I gave them $500 to spend on their trip. So I was avoiding the fee. And now I'm making 10% on my money in one day. Like, who can make 10% on their money in one day? No one, right? So I said, oh, hey, I could do this. And then it started to be like, hey, I need $200,000 in North Carolina. I have a stash house over there. No problem. Call my bookie over there. Hey, I need you to drop off $200,000 here. Boom. So now I'm just moving this money for this cartel member, but I don't know it. I don't know he's a cartel member. I'm just thinking he's a businessman who, you know, I know he's doing something illegal, Steve. I'm not going to lie, but I don't care because I feel like I've already broken the law. I'm bookmaking. I'm already money laundering as it is because we're dealing with cash. So
is he in the US or Mexico?
No, he's in Mexico.
Okay.
And I'm so good at it. Like, he doesn't realize, like, I could pick up a phone and make something happen like that. And he's really impressed, right? And to me, that's like where my rocks get off, when I can impress another businessman, because I'm thinking he's a businessman, right? And I'm impressing him, like, wow, this guy's really working good. And so later on, he says, hey, I need you to pick up $1 million. And when he told me it's in Texas, I'm like, well, what do you mean pick it up? He's like, it's my rival neighborhood. I can't go over there. So that's when the thing started to click. Okay, rival, what is this guy? And so knowing he was in Mexico, then it started to click that this guy's a cartel member, because he can't go to Mexico, probably because of the Zetas, right? Or, you know, who thinking, okay, he's like, I need you to go to the Brownsville airport, and I need you to pick $1 million. You're going to still make your 10%. So I'm like, that's $100,000 in one day. Like, I haven't had a score like that in a long time. Like, let's do it, right? So he's like, you need a private plane. Easy. I got one for $2,500 an hour, you know, a turboprop. And he says, maybe bring some security, right? So I was like, I got Tank, who's a Crip, and I got his friend Diego, who's a UFC fighter. I'll take those two guys and I'll pay them each $2,000. So I'm doing the math. I'm like, okay, it's going to take 4 hours to get down there, 4 hours to get back in the prop. And I'm like, I'm going to profit like $80,000 after I pay everyone off. I'm like, this is what I'm talking about. You know, this is my type of business right here. I'm just moving money, and it's not costing me anything. I'm not taking much risk. And I started to do this, and I get to Brownsville, and this guy shows up in a lawn. Looks like a gardener. He brings out this duffel bag and he pays me, and he goes, "This este para el jefe. This is for the boss." I'm like, okay, we're cartel now. Like, this is for the boss. This is cartel we're dealing with.
Did you speak Spanish?
At the time, you know, I learned enough. Okay, I said, you know, gracias, señor. Like, I think, yeah. You know, so I took it and I got on the plane and I told the pilot, let's go. And I remember I got on that cryptid phone, and right when we touched down in Torrance Private Airport, I said, hey, El Jefe, your package has arrived in Los Angeles. Where would you like it dropped off? And he had me drop it off at one of his stash houses in San Diego.
Did you do the drop?
No, I had my workers. I never touched any of this stuff. I was scared. Like, yeah. I was still safe. Like, you know, I was scared to touch the drugs. I was scared to touch the money. So I had my workers drop it off. You know, just my runners. I had a lot of runners in the bookmaking business. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, hey, take this money to this customer that won. I never associated anybody in my bookmaking business with the drugs. I never crossed that line because I didn't want them to get scared. So they would drop it off. I paid the guys. I paid the pilot. Everyone was happy. They all got paid in cash. And El Jefe was 30 minutes later, goes, wow, that was amazing, right? I did that in one day. And he saw this opportunity in me. And this thing really, really started to move fast. And he saw this vision. And he says, do you think you could do the same thing in Australia? And I'm saying, Australia? Like,
now we're talking, just talking money.
We're just talking money.
Okay.
In my mind, right? We're talking money. I'm like, okay, Australia, yeah, I could do that. Like, what do you want? Like, no, you're going to do the same thing. Just clean some of my money. Perfect. Let's do it.
Now, what hooks do you have in Australia?
I don't have any at the time. I'm thinking to myself, right? I'm like, what do I have? He's like, do you have anyone in Australia? I'm like, I have an aunt. I have an aunt that's my mom's sister. Oh, yeah, she lives in Perth. Like, she's been there 30 years. And he's like, well, could you go visit her? I said, yeah, I could visit her. And I'm like, okay, like, what do you need me to do? Like, Steve, I'm willing to do anything. This guy just paid me $100,000 for a day's worth of work. Right? Like, come on, you're going to do anything. He's like, how would you like to make $1 million a day? I said, I'm 26 years old, Steve. $1 million a day. Remember, my dad's a construction worker, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, $1 million a day. Like, there's more to this, right?
Right, right.
I said, $1 million a day. What's behind this hidden door, right? And he's like, well, I got some product over there and I need you to move it. I said, well, I don't know. I don't have that market. I don't know anything about it. But that light bulb goes off. And I said, but I'll figure out a way, right? I'll find someone. Like, $1 million a day. Like, I've never, this is money for a kid like me.
Did you ever feel like maybe this guy was... had thrown that line out there, and now he's setting that hook and he's starting to reel you in?
Oh, well, listen, at the time, I didn't think like that. Really? But of course, after spending 10 years in a federal prison cell, yeah, of course.
Yes. Right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Hindsight.
Yeah, hindsight. And we wouldn't be here today if this didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So he says, I got product over there. I'm like, okay, well, this is a whole different animal. But I went back to that Rolodex. He says, can you move it? I said, I don't know anyone, but I'm not turning down $1 million a day. I'm going to figure it out because that's what I've been doing my whole life. I've always been the underdog, and I figured out a way to get there. So I said, let me think about it. So I went to the Rolodex. I say, I'm thinking people in the drug game. My guys in Northside Redondo are obviously gangsters. They're not going to know anything about this. I need to get to the international level. Mm-hmm. So I remember I had a friend that was on the baseball team, and his brother was a weed grower, and they used to take weed. It shipped to New York, and then the guys in New York. I remember hearing the story. I'm like, okay, I got to go to this SC baseball player and ask him if I could talk to his brother. And that's where I started. It sounds funny, but I started there.
And you said SEC?
At USC.
Oh, USC.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm an SEC fan, sorry.
Yeah, so I went, and he says, you wouldn't believe it. My brother is still in the business. His international contact's actually in San Diego right now. He says, you should go meet him. I'm like, perfect. Like, I go down there, I meet his brother, I tell him who I am, and he's like, this is my friend from Italy, and he's visiting me. And I'm like, okay, well, can I talk to him? Like, I don't even know how to approach this, right? This is like, the guy wanted to talk to me. He says, you want to talk about drugs in this country? You're out of your mind. He goes, I left this country for a reason.
Left what country?
The U.S.
Okay.
He says, do you want to talk to me about anything illegal? You have to meet me in Naples, Italy. That's where I live. I'm like, wow. But I'm still thinking about that $1 million a day. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I'll go to Naples. And I remember buying that flight. And I get to this, you know, looks like a vineyard, couple villas. And this guy, this Italian old school gangster, greets me. The same guy that was in San Diego with my college friend. And he's like, so what do you have? Like, what do you got? And I broke it down. I said, I have a guy that gambles with me that says he has product in Australia. He goes, don't waste my time. He goes, get out of here. Like he was rude about it. He's like, no one can get product in Australia. He says, that's the hardest place in the world too. He goes, I've been in this business 50 years. There's no way you have product in Australia. He says, go. And I said, no, let me tell you. So I started warming up to him, and my charisma, you know, kicked in, and we're now drinking wine, and we're having, you know, seafood in Naples. And I finally, like, convinced him that there's product over there. And he's like, well, listen, I can move it. If you have it there, I have international contacts all over the world. I got people in Australia that can move it. I got people in Amsterdam. I got people all over. He says, don't worry. I can get it off, but I don't believe it. Don't waste my time. I said, how would I do this for you? How would I go there? And once I see it with my own eyes and my boss tells me it's there, will you come over? He goes, yeah. So I remember I said, okay. I told El Jefe now that I can, I said, I got a guy that can move it. And I flew over and he's like, well, where's your guy? I said, he's not here. He says, he's not coming over until I see the product. He goes, don't waste my, this is El Jefe. He says, don't waste my time. The product's there. Get your guy over there. And I didn't see it yet. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but I lied to this, we'll call him Uncle Louis because he's from Italy. I said, Uncle Louis, this product's here. Get over here. And I'll never forget this day. He told me the first test run, I had to get this, El Jefe said, get a hotel room at the Four Seasons.
What city?
This is in Sydney.
Okay.
And, I was so scared because I don't want to be around the product, right? And I said, I told Uncle Louis, you got to get a room right next to me in the Four Seasons. So I went in, checked in, got a room, and Uncle Louis got a room right next to me. And I said, as soon as this package gets dropped off, Uncle Louis, I said, you got to come over and take it because I'm not touching this shit. You know, I already knew. I looked up the statute. You get caught with a kilo or more, you're going to prison for life over there. Mm-hmm. I was scared.
Sure.
Yeah. They do not f*** around. And he came. He came, knock on the door, and there was a guy in a DHL suit, and he just dropped off the package. I'm like, okay, cool, DHL. Open it up. I said, Uncle Louis, get over here. 10 kilos, boom, right off the top. And he looked at me, and he said, nephew, you just became a millionaire. I said, are you serious? Like, he could tell by the smell, that same smell we were talking about.
Acetone.
Yeah. He says, you just became a millionaire. And I said, get it out of here, Uncle Louis. Just do what you got to do. I'm just like nervous now. You know, I'm stressing. I'm sitting there just on the bed, just waiting. 30 minutes later, he comes back. $1 million. 100,000 a kilo. That was the wholesale price that I sold it to him for. El Jefe charged me 50,000. I charged 100,000. And Uncle Louis, I don't know what he charged. That wasn't my business. So I now had $1 million in my presence. That was the first day. The next day was 20 birds. The next day was 20 birds. The next day was 20 birds. And all of a sudden now we have all this millions and millions of dollars now. And you got to remember, I think I'm like 26, 27 years old, Steve. And I'm like, oh, I'm staying in this apartment in Darling Harbour in Sydney. And it's just this little studio. And I have so much cash filled in my kitchen, in my dishwasher, in my attic. I don't know what to do.
And it's not like you see on TV where $1 million fits in a suitcase, is it?
No, these are $50 bills, man. These
that's a whole lot of 50s.
A whole lot of 50s. And I had a money counter and I had to count it. I had to verify it was there. Sometimes these stacks would be off like by $10,000. Sometimes they would be plus $20,000. I mean, it was all over the place. And it takes so much time to count that money. I would spend 6-7 hours a day counting money. Like, people don't realize how much $50 that gets jammed up. It doesn't count right. You got to run it again. It's a headache. Mm-hmm. That was scarier than the cocaine, just knowing you're sitting on all this cash and you're now working for somebody that's a lot more powerful than you.
And who knows, besides you and Uncle Louie, who knows that you've got the cash stashed there?
No one knows. No one knows.
Really?
Yeah, no one knows at the time.
Because you would have been a prime robbery target.
Dude, I would be robbed for sure. No one knows. And Uncle Louie and I are popping Xanax. We're drinking wine every night. We're stressed. He's staying in an apartment down the road. I got mine. He's keeping his money there. He's going through it like I am. Because you got to think he's sitting on just as much, if not more. I don't know what he's charging. Mm-hmm. So we're stressed. We're taking Xanax every night, like 5 p.m. We're on the Xanax. We're taking the white wine. And we're at Darling Harbour just trying to, you know, calm our nerves. Now what?
Yeah, and that money belongs – all that money is not yours. That belongs to
El Jefe. Yeah. So you got to remember now, this is the catch, right? I'm thinking, okay, I'm just doing this for El Jefe. But now I realize he wants me to do the same thing as before when I was in the States, which was launder the money. Now I got to get it out. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about getting money out internationally. But I got to find out a way, right?
Yeah.
I got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And I said, man, where do I go with this? I called my accountant from San Diego and I said, I got a problem. I got a gambling customer because remember, never talk about drugs with anybody. That is like the biggest sin in the world.
That's so taboo.
I got a taboo, right? I called my accountant saying, hey, I got a gambling customer that's a whale. The guy's lost like $5 million. He's got another $5 million to play with right now. I said, can you help me clean this? Get it out of the country. I don't know how to do it. He flies over with my best friend from volleyball at USC, one of my best friends. He flies over with his father-in-law, who's a captain for a fire department. They're thinking, this is legal gambling money from a gambling customer because they looked up the laws and gambling's legal in Australia. Mm-hmm. I lied to him. But listen, I got to figure out a way. So they're there. I put them up in the nicest hotel. I get them the nicest dinners and wines, and I'm just like treating them. I said, this trip's on me. They didn't ask for a percentage. They just wanted to be wine and dine and help. You know, this construction kid just hit big, right?
Wow.
As this whale for a customer. And I convinced them. And they said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to buy Euro notes, the $500 Euro notes, and we're going to buy gold. This is my accountant's idea. He says, we'll start buying that with the cash. Each of us will start with $50,000 a day. And we'll go to every gold store and buy as much as we can without getting identified. Keep under that $9,000. And then we're going to go to the exchange spots. And we have these fake IDs that are U.S. passport cards that no one knows about at this time. They just came out with these fake names. And we're going to use those to exchange our cash for euros. Why euros? At the time, a euro was worth $750 for every 500 euro note. So if you got a $500 euro note, that at the time was $750. So what we did was we took 50,000 cash and exchanged it all for the 500 euro notes. And then we came back to my studio and we bought comic books and we put those euro notes between the comic books and we vacuum sealed them. And then we threw them in an eBay. At the time, eBay was big. We threw them in an eBay envelope, put the eBay sticker, the comic brand, and we sent the money to all these PO boxes we had set up in the U.S.
Why comic books?
Because we figured if someone's buying something from someone in Australia, like, why not comic books?
Like a collector's
item? Yeah, like a collector's. So no one's going to question a comic book. And when it's going through the U.S. Post or the Australian Post, it's called the AUS Post, no one's looking at the legal envelopes. You know, they're thinking people are hiding money in different things. And like at the time, no one's thinking a legal envelope's filled with cash, right? Especially Euro notes. It worked 100%. Never had one picked off. And then we're like, okay, this is taking a little long. We're running out of Euro notes. Everywhere we've gone is they're out. You know, we bought all the Euros. And then we're like, okay, let's start doing the 1 ounce round gold coins. Because we can use the UGG boots, which is from Australia, and we'll put the 1 ounce rounds, four of them, inside the UGG boots, and we'll buy the extra sole where we'll glue it on top. And once we ship these UGG boots, we go to the postage store, UPS, or they're going to just think we're just sending gifts. So we'd go to different locations and send these UGG boots as you know, gifts from Australia. Everyone knows UGGs are from Australia.
Oh, yeah.
So we had girlfriends, wives, and everyone had UGG boots. Father had UGG boots, every size and color you could imagine, man. I should open up an UGG store. So we have all this gold coming in. I'm like, man, this is taking way too long. Like, what's next? Bank of China. Bank of China is just as shady as they sound. $50,000, you could walk into Bank of China with 50,000 cash and wire anywhere in the world. And we figured that out because we were storing our gold in the safety deposit boxes. And my accountant asked them if they do international wires. They said, yes, we do international wires up to $50,000 with cash. So he went back and he had these fake IDs made with different names with the U.S. passport cards. So we had a way to get our money to the U.S. through the Bank of China network. And we started coming in with different names, and there was three branches in Sydney, and we'd go to each one, you know, once a week, and we'd start doing 50,000 at a time. We just started sending this cash to shell corporations. And we're like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. But Steve, the money was coming so fast, this wasn't even putting a dent, you know, like we've moved maybe $1 million that way. It took too long. And I was dating this Mexican girl at the time, very high class, met her in Vegas, and she had a lot of good, like, high dollar clients. Like, not clients, but friends. Mm-hmm. And I remember I reached out to her and I said, hey, I got this gambling customer of mine in Australia that I have this cash. I don't know. Do you know anyone that could maybe help me get it out of here? Like, do you have anyone? I'm thinking maybe she knows someone that's in the casino business.
Now, are you doing this on open phone lines?
Yeah, this is open phone lines.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because remember, I don't know anything about hiding.
Okay.
At the time, I'm not thinking I'm this El Chapo drug lord, right? I'm just talking to these people like this is a gambling customer that lost money. I'm not exposing like this is drug money, right? So I'm thinking I have like a little cushion, right? So I tell her and she's like, I got a gambler that's a high roller in Vegas. This is what he does. Maybe you should meet him. I said, perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to do. That was what I was thinking. If we could gamble it through the casinos, we could launder it that way. Mm-hmm. And I said, I want to meet him. So I fly back to Santa Monica from Australia and I meet him at the Fairmont Hotel, you know, 5-star hotel right on the water on Ocean Avenue. And I tell him my situation. I said, hey, I got this gambler. He's losing all this money. I said, I can't get it out fast enough. I said, do you have any advice? He goes, listen, this is what I do. He says, we'll start small. I'll pick up $1.5 million and I'll play it through the casinos. I'll come in. My host will call in as a high roller. I'll fly in. I'll get a comp room and they'll let him know I'm coming. And at the time, he was a high roller at the Venetian and the Bellagio and all these big hotels. So it was normal. They called in. They say, I got a whale coming in from Vegas. He's got some cash to play and he wants to play at the Star Casino. So he comes in. I meet him at the Four Seasons. I give him the duffel bag and he says, you know, per our agreement, 25% goes to me, 75% goes to you. I'll give you the cash in the U.S. Boom. We shook hands on this already at the Fairmont, so I already knew what was happening. Gave him the cash. 48 hours later, he says, hey, I'm leaving Australia. We're good. Everything's good. So what he did was he took the money to the Star. He dropped off $1.5 million. They gave him chips. He started playing on the blackjack table. After a couple hours, he says, you know what? I'm not feeling it. I got to get back to the U.S. What did they do? They took the chips and they issued him a check for whatever amount it was. Maybe it was 1.5. Maybe it was 1.7. I don't know. It wasn't my business. All I cared about was getting my money, my 75%. So they gave him that check. He flies to Vegas where he's this high roller. He goes there. They give him the check over there. And sure enough, they cash it, give him chips and cash, whatever he wants, because he's the man over there. Calls me, says, hey, I got the 1.5 minus my commission. I think it was close to $1 million. And I said, perfect. Where do you want it? Had my wife at the time. It was my girlfriend at the time. Pick up some. I had my dad, out of all people, pick up some. And I'm telling them, hey, I got a customer that just lost a lot of money. Could you just grab this cash for me? Because I'm in Australia. Yeah. So I'm utilizing anyone and everyone. Because like, I'm a one-man band. I got to figure it out. So I have all these people working for me and they have no clue that this is cocaine money. I'm just telling them this is gambling. And he calls me in 2 weeks later. Hey, let's do it again. You know, he liked it. It was easy money for him. We're going to do the same thing. All right. Boom. $2.5 million. And he comes. I gave him the suitcase, got his Tumi luggage, got his first class ticket there. Everything he asked for. Boom. This guy's a businessman just like me. I like how he does business. 3 hours later, he's calling me. He's like, we got a problem. I said, what do you mean? He goes, I lost all your money. I said, whoa, 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 whoa.
2.5.
He says, I actually only have 300,000 left. I said, no, you don't. I said, you have 2.5 million minus your 25%. That's all you have. You should have the rest for me. I said, we went into this. No. I got to see you. I said, I'm not buying it. And at the time I was with my personal trainer, we were working out. And I said, hey, we got to go to the Star Casino. I don't believe this one bit. He goes, I got a pit boss over there. He goes, we'll find out if he really lost it. I said, let's go. And we meet him and he's just shaking like a leaf. I'm like, you got 300,000? I said, give it to me. I said, you're not spending that 300. He goes, no, I don't have it. I have it at the room. I said, well, we're going to go get it. And I said, right now you're going to sit down because we're going to check and see if you really lost this money. We're not buying it. So my trainer goes and talks to the pit boss. And sure enough, the guy said he blew it. I'm like, nah, there's something fishy about this. This guy probably worked a deal with the pit boss. They took the money and they're doing something shady. I said, we got to look into this. I said, but first, let's take that $300,000 he has. Let's get him to bring it to us. Let's get that out of his hands. He's not losing anymore. No one knows that this is the cartel's money, right? Right. I can't tell anyone that. So I tell him, okay, we're going to get a room at the Hilton Hotel on George Street. I said, you're going to go grab your 300, grab your passport, and meet us over there because I can't have you going anywhere until we figure out this situation. And so this trainer and I are like, man, what are we going to do? Like, I said, well, what we need to do is we need to get the money out of my apartment because he picked up money at my apartment before. So he knows where I live. I said, I got a lot of money in there, but I got a $700,000 suitcase that I know what we'll do. We'll take that 700 and the 300 and that'll be $1 million. Take that million, put it in your farm where you live. This is my personal trainer. Because mm-hmm. my idea was like, okay, let's just start getting some of this money out of here. And so he comes to my house and we're waiting for him to call us saying he was going to the hotel. And finally he calls and he says, I'm on my way over. And I tell my trainer, okay, take this suitcase, 700, take it to the hotel. As soon as you get there, put it in the safety deposit box. This guy's going to meet you. Take the 300. Now you got $1 million. And we're going to take that and put it away. And as soon as he gets there, call me. I'm going to come up. He never called. So he called, but he never came. So my trainer's on the way there. And now all of a sudden, like 2 hours goes by and my trainer didn't pick up my phone. I'm like, okay, this guy just robbed me. Like, what's going on? 3 hours goes by, 4 hours goes by, nothing. So now I'm thinking my trainer got me for my 700 grand. Well, come to find out when he showed up to the hotel, the New South Wales organized crime squad was waiting there. And they picked off my trainer with 700,000. They said, we got a call that you have a gun in the room. We need to check your bag. He didn't have any gun, but he had 700,000. So now I just lost 2.5 million of the cartels along with 700,000 that I had. So now I'm down 3.2 million in one day, Steve. And I don't know any of this yet. And I'm freaking out. I finally, 5 hours later goes by and I keep calling and Sean's phone is answered, but it's not answered by him. It's answered by a female. And she says, hi, this is Carolyn from the New South Wales Police Department. Can you come to the station, please?
I'm to
like,
you.
To me. I'm like, I'm not coming to no station. I said, I'm all the way in Bondi Beach right now. I said, I'll come tomorrow. Okay. She knew me as Junior because my name was saved in his phone as Junior. She's like, okay, Junior, we'd like to see you tomorrow. Now I'm freaking out. Now my guy's arrested. He's in jail. Obviously, I know that the 700, he got picked up because she called and told, she answered saying we want to know about the 700,000. So now my mind's going, holy shit, I got to get out of Australia. Comes out, finally gets out the next day on bail. And he's like, hey, they got the 700 grand. That guy, RJ, he called the cops. Dude, this is bigger than it looks. I said, what do you mean? I said, we got to get that money back, man. He's like, dude, I don't know how we're going to get it back. He's like, man, maybe we pay a barrister off. I got a lawyer. That's what he tells me. He goes, I got a guy that has a lawyer that could get us this money back. I'm like, Steve, at the time, I didn't care. I get anything, $1, anything. I need to get this money back. You know, I'm just freaking out. This is not my money.
So did he lose it at the casino?
That's what they say.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to see later on in the story, but yeah, that's what they say, you know. Okay. So 2.5, 700 now, 3.2, I'm in the hole and I'm like freaking out. I'm thinking I'm going to be a wanted man in Australia. I'm like, I got to get out of here. So we finally, right before I get on the plane, he says, I got a lawyer that's going to be able to get us the 700 grand back. We're just going to have to make this story up. We'll put together a story. By the time you get to the US, we'll have it all figured out. Don't worry. We're going to get it back. I'm like, okay, at least I'll get something back, right? And I get to the LA and I'm like, man, 3.2. Now El Jefe is hitting me up on that encrypted phone. Hey, I need some money dropped off here. I need it dropped off here. What's going on? Why haven't I heard from you? I'm freaking out. How am I going to tell a member of the cartel that I lost 3.2 million of his? Like, there's no way I'm telling him on this BlackBerry. I said about that. I said, is there any way I can meet you? I said, I need to talk to you about the money. He's like, what do you mean? I said, I'm not telling you on the phone. I said, I need you to meet you in person. And keep in mind, Steve, I've never met this guy. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, there's no way I'm going to tell a man on the encrypted phone that I lost 3.2. I'm going to be killed. I need to be able to see him so he sees that I'm not lying. Like, that was the the smartest thing I ever did, because if I would have played with him and just beat around the bush, I would have been killed. I know I would have been. I said, the only way I can convince this man is if he looks at me and talks to me, man to man. So I told him, I said, I need to meet you. And he flew on his private plane to Tijuana. And he told me, meet me at the, he says, I will have a driver pick you up at the McDonald's. So right when you cross the San Ysidro border at the time, there's a McDonald's.
And so now you're in Mexico.
I'm in Mexico now. I'm in Tijuana. And I get picked up by a Sicarios in a bulletproof vehicle. And they say, they roll down the window. They say, Güero? I said, yeah. Jump in the car. And I get in the car and I sit in this, I think it was a Suburban or Escalade. And I look back and there's these two Sicarios with guns. And I'm like, oh, this is it. Like, this is, they're going to just blow my brain off. I thought it was done. But keep in mind, I already had popped about 3 Xanax, some GHB. I was prepared to die. So I was, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die calm, right?
I'm going to die calm. There's a new saying for sure. Yeah.
So I remember we got this entourage now, you know, these vehicles pull in, a Hummer pulls up, and that's El Jefe in the front, and they got these armored vehicles following. So we got this entourage. It's feel like when we were at USC, when we used to go travel to the Coliseum. Yep. You know, that's what it felt like. The first time I felt like that in years. And so, you know, they take us to this town called Puerto Nuevo, which is a small lobster town. And it was like, I think it was like a Monday or Tuesday, and the whole restaurant was closed. And the whole town was deserted. It was like, man, what's going on? And we went into Puerto Nuevo number one, and there was only one lady making tortillas and one waiter, and he had a table, and they're all his Sicarios. And I met him for the first time, and I shook his hand and told him who I was, and I had my driver's license to show him, like, this is me, I'm not hiding, this is where my family lives. Like, he already knew all that. Come on, you think he didn't do his homework? And I sat down and I told him the story. He already knew, though, Steve, because the articles were already out in the Australia Times and the Sydney Times and the Sydney Herald that this bag of cash got picked up. So I guarantee he already knew. This guy's, he's resourceful. And I told him the story, just how it went down. And he's looking at me, and I knew he was reading me. He was feeling me out, seeing if I was lying. And he believed me. I mean, I wasn't lying. I was telling him the truth. And I think that's what saved me. Being able to tell him man to man that I how it went down. Mm-hmm. And because he already saw me launder the money, he saw how quick it was happening with that 1.5. So he was happy. But you got to remember, I was more of an asset to him than being a dead man.
Right.
So he told me, he says, "Why don't worry, man. You don't owe me 3.2 million. You owe me 4 million. He says, "But you work for me now." He says, "I'm going to give you some time off." He says, "Run your business, the bookmaking business, like you've been running before you met me. And 2 years from now, we'll start to work again, and you're going to owe me 4 million.
Why did he bump it up to 4?
Interest. Okay. It's business. Just like those Serenios used to bump up, you know, the chart. It's just business 101. So it's 25% he's making on the money. And do the math. That's, I work for him now, right? So I ran that business. I ran that bookmaking business, Beto Dog. Just like business was usual. But now I had the backing of the cartel.
Yeah. And for our listeners, we made an agreement with Owen here before we did the interview. And we've been talking for several weeks that we would not ask him about who is El Jefe. We're not going to ask you what cartel that you were involved with, simply because there are family members that could suffer retribution if you ever talk about them. So that's the reason we're not telling you who or what. I don't know, and I'm not asking. So I just want you to know that's why I'm not identifying anybody here. So for 2 years now, is it 2 years that you're just running the betting business?
Running the Beto Dog. And it was great. I'll tell you why it was so good, Steve, because now I could take any bet. I had El Jefe's backing, right? So now my business had blown up. I went to Macho Sports and got all his clients and all these bookmakers that were getting picked off. I was taken over. And everyone knew me as this black market bookie that would take any action. I took a $250,000 bet on a Super Bowl game.
What's the incentive for the bookies that have been arrested to give you their clients?
Kickbacks.
Oh, you're paying them.
Paying them envelopes. Gotcha. Dropping off envelopes for them because they can't book ever again. And they know they're being watched. So we'd have a runner drop off an envelope of, you know, 25 grand, whatever the players. We just kept them as far away from them as they could. And we just kept a tally. If they ever wanted to log in, they could look in the software and see the what their players had lost.
Wow. That's, you know, I mean, you think about the illegal businesses and you're actually an honest guy in the illegal business.
Very honest.
You just kind of presume that if I'm doing something illegal, I'm going to screw you eventually.
Most people do. You're right. But I told people I ran my business like I ran a Fortune 500 business. I was honorable. Everything I did, I was honorable. Look, I'm paying back El Jefe eventually. You're going to find out I pay him back. But that's how I was raised. That's how Big Jim taught me.
Are you making payments to El Jefe during that 2 years?
No. He just said, hey, just do your thing. He said he didn't want to affect my money to run my business. And I appreciated and respect that because now I was able to not worry about that.
Did he reach out to you occasionally? Just say, hey, what's up?
No, like he was still betting, like, you know, so I still had him betting with my bankroll. And it's not like I was like, it's, you know, it just didn't feel right. But he said, business is business. Don't worry. Just keep running. And, okay. And that was a relief for me.
Wow. And then during that 2 year period, any cocaine dealings or any illegal narcotics?
No, nothing illegal. We just took it off. He says, you're hot. He says, people are watching you. And he was right. But he didn't realize that they were watching me. And I didn't realize they were watching me, but they were watching me this whole time.
2 years is a long time.
They were waiting. And they were building this case because they were getting information from Mantra Sports, from all the people that got indicted. We're obviously talking per their agreements. And I knew they were watching, Steve, but I knew I had to pay back El Jefe. The reason I knew is I had so many contacts that work for this company that were telling me, like, listen, we went to this cooperation agreement meeting with the feds and they had your driver's license. They told us what you did, what kind of drugs you sold. Were you doing ecstasy? What? They would tell me everything. So I knew, Steve, I was being watched, but there was nothing I could do. I had that marker of $4 million that I knew I had to pay back.
Of all these dealings, whether it's the drug business or the betting business, did everybody pay you? Nobody ever tried to screw over you?
My collection ratio was pretty much 90%. I had the best in the business because when I did business with you, if you referred me to a customer, I said, okay, are you vouching for them? Because if they don't pay me, I'm going to come to you. And if you don't pay me, then I don't want you as a customer. So every person that I got as a new customer had to verify a driver's license and that they would vouch. Otherwise, I didn't want the business. Because if you're bringing me Mel and you're saying Mel's good, then that means you're willing to pay Mel's debt if he doesn't pay me. And that's how I entered the business relationship with the new customer.
How do you enforce that? Don't tell me about any murders.
No murders. Never killed anyone in my life. I enforced it with a scare tactic. So I'd get your driver's license, and I had a private investigator that worked for me and worked for the FBI, retired, and he would give me information on that customer. So I'd be able to run a credit check, run where their family lived, run everything. And anytime I had a stiff, a guy not pay me, I would say, hey, run the guy. Here's his license. Tell me everything about him. And he'd give me a report. Okay, his mom lives here. His dad lives here. He has two siblings. He has two kids that go to school here. And then I would use that information in order to somehow give him a little nudge, whether it was sending roses to his wife at her work at Northrop saying, hey, tell hubby it's time to pay up. Any scare tactic I could to get them where they're calling me and saying, hey, you don't need to send flowers to my wife. Can you tell me where I need to wire that money? You know, you had to crank it up for certain people, but I never, ever put hands on people, never hurt anybody. So I would use those scare tactics, you know.
You never had your guys lay hands on somebody?
No. One guy was supposed to go to an apartment in Minneapolis, and he was just supposed to show up there and collect. And the guy got a little rough with my guy, and I think he smacked him like a couple times. And that was the only time there was any kind of violence, right? And it later it ended up biting me in the butt when I got sentenced, because now you have that violent, and that's an extra, you know, 2 points on the sentencing guideline.
Yep.
That's why I always push the issues with my workers. We never get violent, and some guys just don't listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's that culture. You know, and it's interesting to sit here and hear you talk about the points on the sentencing guideline, because usually only the cops and the lawyers know about that.
Yeah.
But no, you learn, I mean, through experience, right?
And yeah. Busted by the Feds book is no joke.
Yeah. So at the two, was it 2 years to the day that?
2 years, I got that call. He's like, you ready? And I already knew I was going to go work for him, but I thought I was going to have to move his product for him, right? And he was going to let me use his routes. He said, no, you're not using my routes. You're not ruining my routes. You know, this guy's got the best routes in the business, right? He says, you got to figure out your own. And then that's when I had to learn the system. I did a lot of homework with Pablo Escobar, how he was getting stuff across the country, Chapo Guzman, how they were putting it in cans. And I started how to get creative, man.
Just techniques.
Techniques. Logistics 101.
I want to back up just a second to that attorney over in Australia. What, did he make any inroads in trying to get your money back, or was that just a?
Yeah, so he did. He says he had the way. He says we're going to tell a story, and it's going to be a fake story, and it's a U.S. versus Australia. He says, you don't worry, it's Australian matter, right? And the way, the reason I say it's not a U.S. matter, because that's what he informed me as an attorney, and I believed him because he's an attorney. Mm-hmm. He says, the story is, you know, we have a concert promoter that handled the ZZ Top and Fleetwood Mac concerts in Australia. He says, what we're going to do is we're going to say that you were a silent investor and you paid cash to ZZ Top's promoter in US and you gave him cash. And in return, you were getting paid your cash back in Australia with an interest. And that's the story we're going to stick to. We got ZZ Top's promoter to talk to the feds already. And he says, we will have you tell the same story after he goes in, because we'll know what he said. And he says, don't worry, it's going to be great. We're going to get it back. I'm going to take half. You're going to get half back. And at the time I was like, cool. If it's that easy, let's do it. But this was the catch, Steve.
There's always a catch.
And I'm taking his advice as a lawyer, because that's why he's making this money. I said, okay, so what do I got to do? He says, you got to go to the Beverly Hills police station. I said, whoa, what's that have to do with me with cash in Australia? I said, I'm not doing that. We don't talk to the cops in the U.S. Like, you're out of your mind. He says, no, mate, it's not a U.S. matter. You're just going to go speak to the Beverly Hills police station, and they're going to put you on a call with the law enforcement over here. I said, no. He says, mate, this is fine. We're just giving a statement to get the money back. I said, this is crazy. So I get there and I'm like, man, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm trusting my lawyer.
Right.
You know, I'm trusting him. That's where people need to understand. When you have someone that's supposed to protect and serve you, like law enforcement is supposed to protect and serve the people on the street, the lawyer is supposed to protect and serve you in the legal system. So I'm using this judgment that I'm taking his advice, his legal advice. He's protecting me. So I go in there, I'm thinking, okay, I'm not talking to Australian authorities. I'm going to have my lawyer there. He's going to be there. And it's not a U.S. matter. So Beverly Hills is off the table. And it felt that way, because the Beverly Hills cop greeted me. He looked at my ID. He put me on this Skype call or Zoom call. Now it's Zoom, but it was a Skype back then. And I'm speaking to these authorities. The Beverly Hills cop left. He didn't want anything to do with it. So now my mind's thinking, okay, this is really not a U.S. matter. This guy's gone. He's not even listening. And I'm in the Beverly Hills police station waiting for my lawyer to get there. And he's in Australia. He's like, mate, just tell him the story. We already got the story. Just start talking. So now I don't even have my lawyer present. My lawyer's on the phone saying, mate, just go ahead and tell the story. He's not even there. So now I'm like, okay, this is crazy. He's like, am I really doing this? I don't even have legal representation now. And I'm telling this to the authorities. This is crazy.
Right.
But I'm taking his advice. And I tell the story. And I'm telling them, yeah, I got this money. I dropped it off. I had these investors. They're saying, where did you get these investors? I say, I deal with these VIP customers. I played professional sports. I did this. I have people that invest money in me and I make them return. You know, I'm telling them this lawyer is telling me to tell them. And it's all wrapped up. And I remember he asked me, so how did you get the money? Like, and I said something, I slipped. So I said, you're asking me how I laundered the money. I said something like that. And if I had my lawyer present, I would have never said that word. Like, like laundered the money. That's not the wording, right? You know, but I'm just speaking freely. Mm-hmm. Like my lawyer's not there to help me. So I'm just in that was the trigger. Like I basically said, so you're asking me how I laundered the money. And that was the hook, right? That's what they wanted. And this thing snowballed. And next thing you know, I don't know any of this, but this is all recorded. And so the government over there is playing with them like, yeah, we're going to get the money. You guys are going to get it back. And this whole time we're wiretapped. And I don't know it. I'm wiretapped in the U.S. His law office is wiretapped. His home is tapped. His car is tapped. In Australia, they have different laws, and they're allowed to wiretap houses, mm-hmm. law offices, cars. It's not like the U.S. So this whole time we're discussing on the phone about the matter and how the money's – how we just told the story and we should win an Oscar. Like, we got it. Don't worry. You got it, mate. You did great. We got the ZZ Top promoter. He's happy. He's going to make money. The whole time they're listening.
Who's listening here in the U.S.?
The FBI, yeah.
So they're working
in conjunction. And that's why I didn't get indicted with this Macho Sports, because they had this case already there. They're working on this whole time.
Jeez. I know. They're patient.
They're very patient. 4 years.
So... Okay, so that, you know, I just wanted, because that attorney's going to come into play here later.
Yes.
So now, Heffy calls, you got to develop your own routes.
And I'm like figuring out, okay, how in the hell am I going to do this? So I have to fly over to, I can't go to Australia. I have to fly into Fiji, where a guy that was helping me with the legal end, he was this retired kingpin, and I asked him to join me, to meet me. He couldn't fly to the U.S. because he was already had a felon. He couldn't go to the U.S., obviously. I couldn't go to Australia because I was this wanted man. So we meet at this island in Fiji. And we had he had a mate that owned the island. So we felt safe. There was no one else on that island except him. The story gets crazier, crazy, man. A private island. So I fly there. I remember bringing my wife and her sister. And, you know, he brought his wife. And I land on this island. And it's like, we got it all to ourselves. And I told him the situation. I said, hey, you told me if I ever brought it back into this country, you could help me, you know, get rid of it. I said, well, this opportunity occurred that 4 million that I owe. I said, I need to work for this boss. I said, I don't know. What do you want me to do? How am I going to get into your country? He's looking at me like, man, that's really hard to do. And I remember we were drinking wine and I said, I got it. You know, we were drinking that wine. I said, it was like clear. I was like, it was a white wine. I said, we're going to put it in wine. He looked at me and he says, you're crazy.
Putting cocaine into the wine?
In the wine bottles.
To take into Australia?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's where my vision after that glass started. I was like, I'm going to break it down in liquid form. I'm going to have that alcohol. There's that Everclear that's like 150 proof. And I'm going to break it down. And I said, I'll put it in the wine bottles. But I'll get, instead of the white wine bottles that are clear, I'll get the dark OPEX one that are black. And I said, I'll recork it and I'll send it. So that's what I did. I went back to the U.S. and he says, let's just do a test run. And I got a case. I went to Napa Valley, because everyone knows Napa Valley wine's the best from the U.S., at least from California. And I had one of my runners bring me the wine. I take that back. I got the wine at BevMo from Napa Valley. And I broke down that wine. I dumped it out. And I remember I was with my contractor. I said, there's only one guy I can trust in this. He's very resourceful as far as construction goes. He does cocaine already, so let's bring him into this. So I told him what I had to do, and he's like, oh, that's easy. Take the Everclear, put it in the bathtub. We had these construction sites we were working on, and we had these bathtubs, and we broke it down into Everclear, basically, and it dissolved the cocaine into liquid form. And then I got these big funnels, and I poured it back and wiped them down with alcohol pads. And I had this recorking machine. I put the cork on. I recorked it, put this candle of wax and melted it like a wine bottle. And I put the cases in. And that first one went to Australia. I had my boy over there have the address. And I remember he was on the encrypted phone. He goes, mate, you figured it out. And I said, oh, we got it.
How much coke were you putting per a wine bottle?
I think it broke down. I want to see like a half a kilo.
And this is just the regular wine,
bottles. The jumbos. Yeah, I think we started with, I think we did 24 bottles the first time. And I think we tried like 5 kilos. And it's diluted, obviously, with this alcohol. But he says, don't worry, if we can get it in that way, he had a chemist that could bring it back. and repress it. He says, but we got to make sure it's good quality. And so I bought the product from El Jefe, and it was like 92% at the time. And it came back. And I told El Jefe, we figured it out. We figured out the way. But it got too good. People started seeing the money, and they realized, like, they're not making enough. So the chemist that was charging us $2,000 a kilo bumped his price up because he knew how much money was being made. And I needed him.
What did he bump up to?
He bumped it to 50%. Yeah. And I was already paying 50% to my guy. This is what he's telling me. I was already paying 50% to my guy for catching it. So it's like now we're talking, the numbers I'm making is like the same number I'd make hustling cocaine in the US. Like, what's the point? Mm-hmm. So I had to go back to that drawing board, and I said, man, I'm going to figure out a different way. I said, we're going to cut that guy out.
So we've been going a while now. What I want to do is typically I post out, I'll take an interview and put it in two sections, but we still got a ways to go here. So this is going to be a three-parter for everybody. I know we left you hanging there, and that's the whole point, is to get you to come back tomorrow to listen to the rest of the story. We'll finish up on part three. But thank you guys again for coming every week to listen to the Game of Crimes. Tell your friends, tell them to come over and subscribe. Check us out on Patreon. It's gameofcrimes.com/patreon. Come back tomorrow, hear the rest of the story. I sound like Paul Harvey, right? Tomorrow you'll hear the rest of the story with Owen Hansen. Thank you again for coming. Everybody stay safe. See you tomorrow.